watched it when it was some anniversary thing in the 90s when they came back out with it. And I was like, so what's the story here?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that it was like vignettes that they weren't.
I don't get how.
Full narrative.
Like,
I'm like,
Pegasus is frolicking right. have to do with Mickey in a hat, you know?
With brooms chasing him around and stuff. I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh, I get it. It is brilliant. It is.
I also wonder, too, though, like in today's media landscape for kids, which is so loud, right? There's so many choices, so many big players. You know, like Disney really had the sweet spot, especially in the 90s, where there weren't endless choices, too, right?
Yeah.
Especially for movies. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it let them, I think, dominate so clearly.
Because they had the apparatus in place well ahead of time.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, 1988 doesn't mean that they're real.
And Arlington was one of those locations. But, for the most part, our burials were generally those individuals killed in action. Sometimes you would see veterans, right, have some interest. But after President Kennedy's funeral, that was the turning point. You know, so at that point, we had a very large conscript army that had fought World War II, the Korean War. So there were a lot more people who were eligible for burial, and now there's this increased demand. So I, you know, in 1963, the cemetery did about 1,000 burials. In the next couple years, we were getting 12,000 requests per year for burial. So it really, it completely changed, so, you know, the nature of the cemetery.
Would you place it at the feet of mass media, basically?
Yes.
Before that, because I have this Life magazine here.
Yep.
You had the televised version of it. It was everywhere. People saw that, and they just kind of recognized
so
it.
So what made you choose this movie out of my collection?
I think this movie was a staple growing up in my household. My dad would watch a lot of Mel Brooks movies and just thought Blazing Saddles was hilarious. Particularly the campfire scene was like his favorite. And I remember watching it the very first time and just being like completely appalled at the movie and going like, this isn't funny. This is like nothing about this movie is funny. I find this completely like I couldn't get past. Like, I knew what they were trying to do was funny, but it was like a huge marker for me, I guess, in time. And maybe that might be one of the first times in, like, as a child where I was like, wow, like, things change as we go. And in movies, particularly, I think, are a really good marker of what life was like in that moment or what we thought life was like in that moment.
That's, I mean, you more or less summed up my thesis, is that that's what pop culture is. It should not be overlooked as being documents. And it can get all kind of mangled up because, in this case, I mean, it's not based on a real story by any means or even a real place, but the time period is specific. It's about the Old West.
Yes.
And so it's kind of quasi-history, but it's not a document of the Old West. It's a document of 1974.
Right.
Right? You know, or 73 when they made it.
Yes.
And so it's like, what does that tell us about that really kind of, you know, for our generation? Because it was made, you know, the audience was everybody. It wasn't just the Northeast. Mm-hmm. And so do you think there's anything to that way of thinking, that this was, it was just part of the culture to any chance you could get, continue to beat the drum of we need to be one country?
Well, going back to some of the things that you said, I really think that music has been a very valid medium in wartime. You're right. Like, even since the American Revolution, Yankee Doodle, for example.
Which is referenced in this song.
Exactly. With the Civil War, you have those anthems on both sides. You do have the Battle Hymn of the Republic. You do have Battle Cry of Freedom. But on the other side, you have, like, the Bonnie Blue.
Yeah.
You have When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again. You have Dixie. That disunion. But the other thing is that, like, with the Civil War, that generation, at least when you look at it, were almost anxious to go to war because they hadn't had their shot at glory like their ancestors had had with the Revolution. I think by the time we get to World War I, especially with as recent as Spanish-American War was, we don't want war. We don't want to live with that, just the rationing, the loss, the PTSD. So we did need something to bring everybody together. And if you even look at literacy rates, not everybody is going to be literate. Not everybody is going to read a pamphlet. Not everybody's going to read a book.
And like started to settle down again, and things like that. You know, in the background, the AIDS crisis and epidemic is sort of starting to build. And I think that art has always sort of been this thing that unites people. I think that one of the most fun spaces that you could ever be at is a concert, right? It's a ton of people who are uniting over this like love of a particular art. And I think that the music that we're seeing at this moment is sort of in that same sort of vein. Like, art and music just has this incredible capacity for bringing people together. And I think that was really the objective with the USA for Africa, right? Like, what is the best way to bring America together, to not necessarily focus on America for a moment, but focus on what we can be doing for another group of people? And music, I feel like, was the best sort of avenue to sort of make that happen, right? We see this, like, even now, I feel like fan culture in the modern era has like sort of taken on a life of its own, right? It's like, for example, if you're a fan of women's rap, like, you can't love Nicki Minaj and Cardi B sort of at the same time. They're sort of like they're sort of being opposed to each other all the time. But if you do find the space to get them on the same musical track, on the same stage, and you get those fans to come together and share that moment of camaraderie, like, there's something beautiful that kind of happens from it. So that's what I sort of think. I think that it's just music has always had
this. And even graphic novels, because there's still books. Mm-hmm. You know, there's debate about that among librarians, but I think most modern librarians are like, no, they're
absolutely
books. What is sort of sacred about a book that you like, I want to write a book, I don't want to make a movie out of this, I don't, you know, the book comes first?
Well, I think that with a book, it's able to reach such a wider audience due to the availability between libraries and classrooms. There's so much value in being able to hold a concrete example of something. With graphic novels particularly, it's going to reach readers who aren't always going to want to read a full novel, who get intimidated by that. It's going to appeal to visual learners. And I find what really makes a graphic novel special is all of the pieces that can go into the art that don't need to be addressed in the words. So you can look and really look into the visual and see so many details that would be passed over in a movie, right? Because the pace is just going, going, going. But with a book, the reader sets the pace. So if they want to spend more time with this visual or with these words, they can. They'll go back and look at it again and again and again. And I see that with my own children because they love graphic novels as much as I do. And so seeing their experience with them is very different than seeing it in a movie or a TV show.
And it makes it much more personal.
Absolutely.
The voice in their head, mm-hmm. as they read, is going to be different from the next person. And that's, I know that they...
It's huge on recognizing the importance of libraries. She's huge on information preservation, and I think many people, particularly in America, we can just go through our lives without thinking about what it takes to preserve the past.
Yeah.
And we as history educators, we can appreciate that history isn't the past, it's our reconstructions of it through sources.
That's so excellently put, by the way. That's such a...
Thank you.
I'm going to save that spot forever. That's so good.
Thank you. And, I mean, this is how I can best keep this alive for my students, because my students know Michael Jackson. And if I can tell them the story of how Michael Jackson was first part of the Jackson 5 and how his family were involved...
Gary, Indiana.
Exactly.
Great Migration, I'm sure.
I mean, a huge hub for the Great Migration. And I think bridging that gap and making it quote-unquote real is all I can ask for. And you talk about, you asked if anyone had made a movie about Ida B. Wells. And that aspect of not only the history itself, Ida's life, but the way we tell the stories. I always bring up historiography because I love historiography.
I love it too.
Analyzing those secondary sources as well, and what we can learn about a period of history through the secondary sources of earlier periods, and it just all loops back together.
Yes, you're totally speaking my language here. This is great. I love doing that.
Yes,
because
same.
I remember taking a historiography class in graduate school, and it took a little while to really catch on what they were getting at.
Crazy.
But once I hooked, I'm like, that is wonderful. Because like what you just said, that statement that I said was so good moments ago, I'm like, that's actually right. The history of 1910, you know, the way they told
maybe
history.
Not precise to 1984, but just 80s-ish. That it's like very telling of the time period.
There's a lot of classism in the movie, like really broad characters still, but it's like a lot of like, you can't come in here.
Yeah.
There's like a fancy restaurant and a guy banging out, you know, the guy banging on the window before he gets attacked by the monster, and they all
and
kind
nobody
of
does anything.
Look at him. Nobody does anything. So, and it's that's very growing up in New York. You know, that division was very apparent. You know, who rode the subways, who didn't, things like that.
Right.
And that's not even a point of the movie. It's just because it was filmed in New York at that time. That is a part of it.
I think it was Sigourney Weaver who's in the movie, and she's from New York. She said it's the ultimate New York movie. Like, you really can't have that movie together.